Sorry, it was before it was the morning one because there was more people. It was more, you know, busy and happening. But now it's kind of like these ones are, because you don't get any of the distracting questions.
Yeah, we're thinking that we should check this out and then consider.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just because it is on, you know, it stays within topic. You know,
yeah.
Right? You know, Tchaikovsky is an alarm.
Tchaikovsky and door of no door.
Huh?
Door of no door, Tchaikovsky.
Yeah, all those Russian guys, you know, it's strange, you know, it's like, you know, that's like the Yamaduta jam. You know?
Tchaikovsky is really weird.
Yeah, he's weird. Definitely. But there was one, I forget what it was, this one musician, Indian classical musician. He had one guy come to him. He was a professional, top, I'm not sure what he played, violin, cello, something. He was one of these, you know, top, you know, in these big, you know, philharmonic orchestras and that. You know, not just a guy, but one of the guys. But the music goes to his head all the time, to the point where he actually was going crazy. And then someone suggested, I don't know how, this one devotee who was a classical musician, a top classical musician. So then he went to him and started learning the Indian ragas. They, you know, at least they balance and everything, and, you know, motor goodness instead of all this crazy passion. You know. So then, after about 4 or 5 months, then he's kind of starting to become normal. Yeah, he was so freaked out. Mm. So at least if you got at least the Vedic music going through your head all the time, you won't go crazy.
Maybe it's something to do, you know, the life fairs are disturbed.
Could be. Yeah, because the life fairs, it bothers the head. Because it means the air is situated in the head, the pitta in the chest, and the kapha in the intestines. So. Okay, Prayojana. We made it to Prayojana. Wow. Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastama Vidvishavahai
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Prayojana, the nature of mukti, right? Because he's using this term mukti and moksha a lot, mumukshu, because that was the term of the time, because they were all Shankarites, right? Or if they weren't Shankarites, they were Buddhists. So then, you know, or I'm not sure how many Jains there were, but yeah, Jains were there also. So then so that's the concept that they're looking for. So he's using the same concept, but the point is real moksha means establishing your relationship with the Lord, right? Does that make sense? So therefore you use those, because they're Vedantic terminologies, and, you know, very much popular and appreciated by those of the time. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of, means that either you take what they're doing and then show what's the real thing of it, or you just say, that forget that and do this. Does that make sense? So either of the things work. Generally they'll use both, but where the emphasis is. So his emphasis is on this is the real liberation, this is the real monism. Mm-hmm. Right? Means being in tune with God. That's the real, not this, there is no God and we're all mm-hmm. God. But God is there, this is his creation, I'm his servant. Mm-hmm. So that oneness of, therefore, you know, being in line with God. Mm-hmm. So Prayojana. In the state of moksha, jivi becomes totally free from the shackles of karma. And as such, as jnana manifests itself in its fullness, jiva becomes omniscient and is thus capable of comprehending Brahman in all its splendor. Once the state is reached by jiva, there is never a return to the state of bondage. On the strength of scriptural text, it is admitted that jiva attains a status in moksha almost equal to Brahman. Right? But it's not, because he is Brahman, but he is able to perceive Brahman, because the problem is by the Mayavad conception, you're not perceiving Brahman, because if you are Brahman and you're not conscious, how would you perceive, you know, the experience of Brahman? So the jiva can experience, right? So he's able to, that omniscience is there, so he can appreciate that unlimited Brahman, because he's not controlled by the material body, the material mind, material intelligence. Those aren't there. So he's working on the platform of sat, you know, and then the chit is there. Yes?
Well, it said that he never returns to the stage of bondage.
Yes, well, this means he's talking about devotee. Mm-hmm. Right? So in other words, now all this would sound good to a Mayavadi, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is he's describing the process liberation with the actual jiva on the path of bhakti. It's just the jiva on the path of bhakti doesn't worry about this stuff so much. But he's just explaining how it's there. You know, it's just like in Vaikuntha, they talk a lot about how wonderful and opulent and great the place is, majestic. But in Vrindavan, nobody talks about that. Even though it's much more opulent than Vaikuntha. You know what I'm saying? It's just not as important. So in this state, then he's just showing us that he has no karma. So therefore his knowledge, that chit potency, manifests. But they don't look at it as the sat chit ananda. They're just seeing knowledge, right? Because there's that Mahavakya where Brahman is knowledge. Right? So then they'll be thinking, yes, now he's become that knowledge, because you can't know that knowledge here. But the point is any knowledge that's here, it is based on the chit potency. It's the light of that chit potency. Right? It's Krishna's knowledge. But they're not making that connection. So with this, you're making that connection. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's basically a Vedantic or Upanishadic presentation. So you present through the words and the kind of situations that someone who has that kind of conditioning appreciates. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Religious followers, they were mostly Mayavadis that were converted, or he was preaching just to the audience that was familiar with those terms?
The audience is familiar with those terms, because that would be the terms of the day, because Shankaracharya has preached. So basically Vedanta would be the prominent aspect. Though it's not that others aren't there. You do have karma mimamsa, you have the Buddhist, but there's a prominence of that. So now he'll come, and so these will be common terms. So even if they're not in that, they'll be familiar with the terms. You know, it's just, you know, common terms. On the strength of scriptural text, it is admitted that jiva attains a status in moksha almost equal to Brahman. Thus the Shruti says that the jiva in the state of mukti enjoys supreme equality, parama samaya, with the Lord. The impersonalists quote the text, Mundaka Upanishad 3:29, Brahma Veda Brahmaiva Bhavati, which literally means that the knower of Brahman becomes Brahman, right? Which we don't have a problem with, because we know that jivas are also Brahman. So what's happened is means you have Supreme Lord Brahman. So jiva never becomes Supreme Lord Brahman, but he at least realizes I'm jiva Brahman. Because otherwise he thinks I'm material energy Brahman. Right? But doesn't even identify it as Brahman. He identifies with the material energy. Yes?
It seems strange then that it says becomes Brahman. Would it not be realizes he is Brahman?
That's there, but means if you use becomes, then it shows that he acts like. Because realize then means he understands, so you could use that. But becomes means he actually acts as. Right? So that means now he acts as on the transcendental platform. But they'll take it, they've perverted this, which simply means that the jiva, becoming free from the material entanglement, now acts actually as a jiva. Right? Instead of, before that, he's acting as material energy. He's not actually acting as the jiva. Does that make sense? So the Mayavadis have taken this and perverted it into now he becomes Brahman, emerges in Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it would be similar, like, let's say you have a fish, right? And you found it in a little pond. Let's say a big wave came in and some fish ended up in a little pond, right? And so then there's this whole, you know, thing like this. And so by the, you know, end of the movie, right, then the kids get the fish, you know, to the ocean, and somehow or another, I don't know what's stopping them from it, but then, you know, they get almost there, they're caught, the bucket falls over, and the fish is able to get into the water and swim off, right? You know, so then it's now the thing, or if you're looking at it more romantic kind of thing of how the fish is now back in the ocean, now he's gone back into his, you know, but it's still a fish in the ocean. So we understand it's still a fish in the ocean. But the Mayavadis say, no, when you put the fish back in the ocean, then he merges into the ocean and there's no more fish. He just becomes ocean. Right? It's good that he doesn't go the other way, right? You put it in one fish and then the whole ocean turns into this big monster fish. Like that, you know. Yeah, so whatever it is. But that's what they've done to it. They've taken this romantic thing and then turned it for their own purpose. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. That's what they do. So all these things, it's not that there's a truth in it. You know, like in the morning discussion, we see is there's this idea that, no, there is some truth in the, you know, supremacy of Brahman or in, you know, our independence. That there is some way we can actually be happy. You know, therefore that kind of question comes up, those arguments come up. So, but the point is no, it's a fallacy. There is no such thing as material happiness. It doesn't exist, right? We've defined material happiness as if I get what I think I want, I'll we'll call myself happy, right? Because the same thing happens and somebody's laughing and the other guy's crying. Right? It's the same thing. So how would it get both? So it's not the thing itself. It's how you project what that thing will do for me. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the two siblings are there in the house, and there's something. So if mom says this, the one will be happy, but the other will be sad. You know? So each is trying to get mom to either say or not say. And then whichever one she does say, then, you know, then... Does that make sense? But it's all this. We projected that this will make us happy. And getting out of this will make us happy. But the problem is neither... This itself can make us happy, or getting out of this can make it happy. Because the point is we have to be in the spiritual world. We have to be in relationship with the Lord. Because we're saying, because of relationships, I'm sad. Therefore, I want to get out. Or because of relationships, I'm happy. But the point is these relationships can't make us satisfied because they're temporary. Right? And getting out and having no relationships won't make us satisfied. So it has to be getting into spiritual relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense? So that's why even the Society of Devotees is nice, because it's devotees and it's connected to the Lord. So even though the manifestation may be temporary, the situations change, the bodies change, but still it's nice because the environment is that of the transcendental. Does that make sense? So that's why we appreciate devotee relationships. Right? Because if it's basis, so the more it's based on Krishna consciousness, the more we appreciate it. The less it is, then it will have the natural material ups and downs that come with the material energy. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
That's why the culture is important, because it gives a better situation for Krishna consciousness.
Yes, because then, see the... idea is that if in Krishna conscious culture, like in the spiritual world, let's say Mother Jashoda deals with their child in a certain way, or she deals with their friends in a certain way, you know, or deals with the other younger gopis, and deals with a husband, and deals with, you know, other men in the community. So that dealings are favorable for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? You know, so however it is, then, you know, so you have all those relationships, and the servants to the masters, the teachers to the students, friends to friends, you know, the neutral to everybody else, like all these different relationships, whatever is there in the culture of Braja, then that's in its natural, spontaneous form. That becomes formalized as it moves to Dwarka. Right? And then more form means same formalization, but without the higher three rasas in Vaikuntha. Right? So the forms is that works perfectly in devotional life. So the Vedic culture, since the whole idea of the material world is to reform the jiva so that he takes up devotional service, he needs to do that within a culture. So he's given the culture of the spiritual world, right? But it's just as the one as it becomes, it is certain aspects are emphasized or not depending upon the realm. So as it comes to the material world, the mechanics are the same, but just what's emphasized. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's the same culture. So therefore, it's not, one is trying to understand how to apply that, because it's the culture of someone who's Krishna conscious. Right? It's not Indian culture. This is the culture in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? But the difference in the spiritual world, they follow the culture just to please Krishna. While in the material world, then it's what we're going to get from the culture is why we follow it. If I know if I do this yajna, I will get something, I do it. But in the spiritual world, they do it because it pleases Krishna. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah, yes.
The reason some devotees reject Vedic culture as Indian, is it because they don't catch the principles which the culture is running on?
Yes, they don't catch the principles. So they're just seeing details. So they're thinking that, well, you know, my culture is the culture of the world, when it's not. You know, it's just like you go to China, there is a McDonald's there, right? And they don't mind eating McDonald's, but they still sitting down, talking, interacting, walking on the street, they still are their own culture. They don't mind some of the facilities of the West, but they're not Western by how they think. You know what I'm saying? But the person will think, no, I am following the culture of the world, so therefore what I'm doing, that's the real culture. That's the practical thing. This is the only thing you can do now, right? He'll say, this is the only thing you can do. You can't dress like this and that, you know? And just as he's saying that, you know, about how the women have to dress like this or that and so many things and why all these restrictions, just right there on the street there in a major city of the world, a lady will walk by in a burqa.
You know what?
Burqa? No, no, burqa. No, it means the cloth that completely covers them.
Right there
in London, right there in New York, right there. And just saying, no, you can't do this, it's not possible, it's the culture's dead, and they walk right by you. Right there.
I sometimes think it's famous people who don't want to be recognized walking around in those burqas.
Might be also. Might be also. Generally, they're wearing a scarf like this and big sunglasses.
Yeah.
You know, long sleeves, turtlenecks, like that. So you can't really see much like that. So the thing is these things, they're going on right now. We'll say, no, it can't happen. It's not. It's going on right now. It doesn't happen in your house and in your friend's house, but at other houses, there's millions of them. So the point is, anything you say can't be done now, it was done before, is still going on now. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that we ourselves project onto it what we say will make us happy, because it's the same material energy, it's the same trees, right? Trees act in the same way, dogs in the same way, wood, stone, fire, you know, water, it all acts in exactly the same way. The modes of nature haven't changed, the laws of nature haven't changed. You know, the eight major elements haven't changed. You know, the senses work. It's not that, you know, now you smell with your eyes and, you know, like that. Nothing's changed. It's just the projection that we say, what will make me happy out of it has changed. That's all. You know, so all it is a different species of life. That's all.
Like the emerging middle class?
Yeah, the emerging middle class, which is always emerging. Right? Because then the recession, who goes down? The poor are already poor. Maybe they get a little poor, but they're still poor. Right? Because they didn't make a lot of money when it went up. And the rich guys, even they become a little more poor. You know, it's still, you know, instead of, you know, 500 million, he's only got 200 million. That's poor, right? So who goes up and down? The emerging middle class. So whatever is, they go down. And then when it goes, then they come up again. You know, so like that. So that's, they're eternally emerging.
/ submerging.
Yes, yes. But they like to leave that side off because they don't like that side.
That's the class.
The Tathasta class, yeah. Yeah. So, does this make sense? What we're trying to get at here is that there is an actual view of things, and that view is by these personalities. It's saying here, it says when the jiva becomes in the state of moksha, jiva becomes totally free from the shackles of karma, and as such, its jnana manifests itself in fullness. That means all liberated jivas actually have the same viewpoint of who they are, who God is, and what the material world is. There's only one philosophy. This side of the Viraja, there's many. The other side of the Viraja, there's only one. Mm-hmm. There's different tastes, different rasas, and how they view that one. Mm-hmm. But there is only one philosophy amongst all liberated souls. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, here also, so we can see is Ramanuja. It appears that it's, you know, slightly the technicality is different, but he's only presenting that for the contemporary environment. But, because there's always Mayavadis, it applies at all times. It may be the most efficient at that particular moment. But there's always Mayavadis. Mm. Right? There's always Buddhists. Yes?
Also thinking about this Mayavadi and the tendency of the devotees, you know, is just the progression on different levels of devotional development.
Right.
And we have to give up different things.
Right, right.
And it starts, you know, gross, and then to subtle, and karma,
right,
then gyan.
Right, right.
That's why the whole discussion in the morning was like really hot.
Yeah.
Because it's a matter of identity, and it's difficult, actually.
Yeah. But if that's understood, then you just understand. One is you understand nice, is how did I get to this platform? That's by devotional service. So one gets knowledge, one gets detachment, so one is able to appreciate this distraction. You know, but at the same time, as if one knows it's there, then one's careful to avoid it so that one situates oneself in pure devotion. But if one doesn't know, then we're discussing, you know. I mean, there's we're getting distracted hearing Nama Bas. Now, what about Shuddha Nam? You know, like that, you know, it's like this. You know, that's the whole point. It would be an insult to say that you get liberation from Shuddha Nam. Because in Shuddhanam, what's special is you get prema. And liberation is so small compared to prema that therefore Namabhas will take care of that. You know, it's so small. You know, it's kind of like saying, you know, if you have a 100-rupee note, then all your, you know, 5 pice, 10 pice expenditures are all taken care of. No, but how is that possible? I have so many 5 paisa expended. No, it's all taken care of. You know? So then if you come along with, you know, a $1 billion note and say the same thing, it's kind of like, why would you, what's the, you know? Okay. Then the Mundaka Upanishad, which literally means the knower, that means literally just means if you take the words, but it doesn't mean that's the context of that. The knower of Brahman becomes Brahman, and which implies the identity, tadatmya, of the individual self and Brahman. But the Vishishta Dwait points out that this text does not so much refer to the identity as to equality, sadharmya, which means that the individual self attains the status of Brahman rather than it becomes one with Brahman. Because it doesn't say becomes one with Brahman. It just says becomes Brahman. Mm. They're adding one with Brahman. They'll say, no, it's obvious, one with. No, but it just says becomes. But it says here, as in quality, he becomes Brahman. Right? Because a drop of ocean goes into the ocean, it becomes ocean. But it doesn't become, that drop doesn't become the whole ocean. Now it's ocean. When you take it out, it's a drop of water. When you put it back, it's ocean. You understand? But it's still a separate drop of water than the whole ocean.
So this is similar to the discussion we had this morning about thinking that you're the subject, and therefore thinking that whatever you think is objective.
Yes. Yeah, because they'll say, no, this is the natural, literal meaning of this. Yeah. When it's not, it's actually their subjective meaning.
Exactly.
Right? It's just their idea. They impose this upon them. Mm-hmm. You know? Yes?
On the liberated platform, Mayavadis, do they able to recognize other jivas, or do they have this vision?
It means in their philosophy or in actuality?
In actuality.
In actuality, I would doubt that a Mayavadi can ever get liberated.
And in the philosophy?
In their philosophy, no, because there is no individuality.
So it's all just one.
It's just all, when they say it's just one, that's why Prabhupada used the term exclusive oneness. Mm. It's just one. There's no discussion anything else. So that's why we have it. Monism isn't a problem, because Krishna is Brahman, that is one, and therefore he pervades everything, he is everything, knows it, like that. But the point is that it's still, he's there as a person, and we're there as persons. And he has this variety of unlimited energies, and they remain as who they are. But the point is everything actually is transcendence. The only thing that's not transcendent is our consciousness that I'm the enjoyer of the material energy. That's actually what Maya technically is. Maya is not all the material elements. Right? Maya is the idea that these material elements aren't God's energy, and they're actually here for me to enjoy. You know. So you have some philosophies that they'll say it is God's energy, but God put it here for us to enjoy. You know. So at least they're God conscious. But it's not favorable to God. Because how I'm enjoying, how is that favorable to God?
Well, that's the most basic religions, because all they do is just asking stuff from God.
Yeah. But at least there's the concept of God consciousness, and that if you want something, you have to go to God. So that part's good. But it's not on the platform of pure devotion. So that's where then the Vaishnavism can show, is that if you feel an improvement in your life by taking that step, how much more of an improvement will be there if you actually function in pure devotion? That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, how he's presenting is that you don't have to change, you just have to keep going in the same direction. So it's not that you've changed, because someone will say, no, but you've changed religion. But actually, what you're not changing is the Sadharma. In other words, you're looking at any philosophy or religion. What is actually Sadharma, that you're keeping, and then cultivating that, because that's the actual essence. Because anything else can change, that doesn't change. So you're cultivating that. Now if the external forms adjust with that, that's not a problem. People adjust all the time in their life. You know, what you wore when you were 3, you wear something different when you're 8. You know, when you're a teenager, young teenager, you wear one thing, you're older, you wear another, in your 20s, another, 30s, you know, it just keeps going. You know, so it's appropriate, and you're comfortable. You don't feel I've changed, right? You just feel I'm developing. It's a progress. So, in other words, you keep what you feel is good, and get rid of what you feel is not useful. So, the point is Sadharma is eternal. So, it's always useful. It's what's actually useful for the soul. The other upadis and all that, those may have a time, place, you know, circumstance of their usefulness, but it changes at some point. You know what I'm saying? The person's going to, you know, just go out there. I mean, they're sitting around the campfire, and they're hungry. So they look around for the closest sheep, right? And they go and grab the guy, right? You know, so that's, you know, where it starts. But then more than that, no, you have to offer it to God first. You know, so it's a step up, you know? So like that. But the point is it's offering to God. So since it's offering to God, God actually doesn't want to eat the sheep. You know, so you offer things that are more offerable to God. So it's not a change. Means it looks like, because we're taking the external as the most important, because that's our identity. But the identity is not, I am this particular form, but I am servant of Krishna. Does that make sense?
So, Maharaj, so when preaching, it's more important to pick up those principles and bring out them from whoever is listening.
Yes.
Then it gradually will come to this.
Yes. Yes. I mean, so you see is that when the acharyas are preaching, that's what they're able to do, is those elements of dharma. Right? That's in the third class, right? In the evening class. We were discussing dharma and the four different aspects of dharma. Yeah. So then in this evening, we'll look at that again, because, you know, we've gone down, but I want to start there, because it's, you know, something that the rest of it's going to be based on. So then, that element of dharma, it's taking into consideration the nature itself and what it manifests through. You know, so when we were discussing before this element of the Brahman, then the quality in Brahman is there, but then there's a form that manifests it. But there's variety of forms, right? So the emphasis was on the quality of Krishna that those forms manifest. But at the same time, is because of conditioning, though one is attracted to that form, but you're attracted to that form because of a jiva, but you're attracted to that particular, I mean, you're attracted to that form because it gives that quality. That's Krishna. But you're specifically attracted to that particular form because of your particular conditioning. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, then you have to look at that those elements, of that, like we were saying before, that, I can never remember his name. I don't remember. Is it Moss or something? It was a, yeah, 61. You know, in the 60s. Maybe Prabhupada talked to him. I don't know. Maybe it's another one. I can't remember. It's just, you know. So he's talking because he's a race car driver, right? And he's a British race car driver. You know. So he start Prabhupada in the conversation talks for 20 minutes about British cars. Right? So the point is driving and being British, then, you know, British cars are, you know, where it's at. Because in those days, and much of your racing cars and all that were British. You had a wide variety there in one country. Other countries had, you know, one car or something like that. But there they had a wide range. So then, you know, he talked about because India is connected with England, so naturally you have British cars. So same cars, he could discuss about how they had this car and this and that. Then, so, you know, driving is there, and then the cars, you know. And then from that, then he gets back into his racing. Now, what does he do like to do with the car? Now, you're driving the car, but you're trying to drive the car at extreme speed, right? So that element of speed, but that means that element of adventure. But adventure means that there's some danger. You understand? It means you climb a mountain, you can fall off or freeze to death, or, you know, a grizzly bear can eat you, or something is there, right? You jump out of the airplane, right? It means, one, the airplane could crash, you know, like that, just even taking off. Or even that, you jump out of the chute could not open. You know what I'm saying? Or something can happen, you know, like that. So there's a danger there. So the whole idea is getting over the danger. Then, how you say? That you call happiness. Does that make sense? An adventure that you cross the danger and didn't and came out alive, that's the excitement. Right? If there's no danger, it's not exciting. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? I go out and I take a board, right? It's maybe, let's say, you know, 10 centimeters wide, right? And 10 centimeters tall. And I lay it straight on the ground and say, you know, and it's 2 meters long. And I say, walk across it. Most anybody can walk across it, no problem. You know? Now, if I lift it 3 meters up in the air and say, walk across it, now I get scared. But you can do it. You have the skill. You have the balance. You have everything it takes to do it. You just can't relate because the fear element is greater than that, so it's not exciting. When you reduce the fear element enough, then it's exciting. When you do it all the time, it's not exciting anymore because there's no fear. You understand? Does that make sense? Okay, so that means the race driving has an attractive element, though it's not spoken, because of the fear of the accidents that can happen. Right? So then, the next natural step is then, so when you're in that moment where it's fear, because if the fear is a little bit on the left side, then it's exciting. If it's on the more side, then it becomes, you know, freaky. So when racing, then there's going to be moments where it's freaky. Somebody's crashing in the corner. You're already going fast. They're in the space you were going to go through. You know, or there's a fire, there's smoke. It means there's a crash, there's smoke. You don't know where the cars are. You know, you could go in there and hit them. You know, you know, you're doing 160. You can't just stop. You know, so those elements, so then Prabhupada brings out, so in those moments, are you afraid? You know, and he said, yes, so what do you do? Right? Do you turn to God? Do you think like that? And he said, you know, basically, yes. So then, okay, now we have that. Now we've made our connection. So now we see the need and the actual practical of connecting to God. So, in other words, they're seeing the Dharma and they're seeing the medium through which it's expressed. Does that make sense? So he's looking at both. So you have to see the masculine and the feminine principle together. But the point is the masculine is the prominent, so you're trying to bring it to there. But then if you've done that, then you can either leave it with that feminine manifestation or shift it to another superior one. Right? You know, they like eating, but you know, they're eating food in the mode of ignorance or passion. You can move it up to goodness. But it's still food. You know? Does that make sense? Yes.
Right, and then you can speak with any of those. You can speak with the parachutist, you know, the downhill cycler, because the principle is fear.
The principle is the same. Yeah. Fear is an element. It's the excitement. It's the adventure. That's Krishna. That's the superior quality. But in it means that there'll be that fear because happiness means getting yourself. Prabhupada says the demons get themselves into a difficult situation and then get themselves out. Having got themselves out, then it's fun. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
I've got an idea.
Yeah. So that's the point. He's got over it. You know. Of course, they never tell you what the idea is because it's impossible. But whatever it is, you know, right? But the point is, if they just you know, come there, park in front of the bank, right? There's a spot there, right? It was not a difficult to get, and it's free parking, right? They get out of the car. They don't have to put on all their masks and everything like that. They just walk into the bank, and they walk in, and, you know, the doorman opens the door and all that, and he comes up to the teller and says, you know, and the teller says, may I help you? He says, yes, we want to take all the money that the bank has. Oh, he says, oh, okay, we'll just, again, he calls a few guys over. They go get all the money, hand it to them. Then they all, you know, I mean, other than, well, of course, let's go back. These are guys that have been working out in the gym, so they're really strong and really, you know, got good balance, so they can carry a lot, right? Because otherwise, then we'd run into the obstacles. They can't carry all the money. In fact, in that they can carry a lot, but the others are seeing that it's still a bit more than they can carry, so other people are helping them get it, put it in the car. And the car is big enough and strong enough, they can put it all in so it doesn't drag or anything like that. And then they drive off and live happily ever after, right? Great theme for a movie, right? No?
They're the owners.
Huh?
They're the owners,
them. of the movie. Yeah, the producers. You know?
True story.
Yeah. I'm the owner of the bank. You know? Yeah.
And then the guy wakes up and he's in jail.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. What happened? You know? Yay. Oh, I had that dream again. If only it worked out that way, yeah.
Bernie Madoff.
Yeah, so the adventure is the same then in all those different sports.
Everything. The concept of adventure, there's only one experience of adventure. But, you know, somebody has to be jumping off a mountain and somebody is just, you know, playing ping pong and it just happens to go, instead of, you know, two times or three times, they've been going on for 10 or 20 times, so they get all excited. It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter. you know, just whatever it is. You know, little babies, you get out something and rattle it. They get the same kind. It's the same thing. There's no. It's just what is the form through which it manifests. The Dharma of excitement's one thing, right? But there's different ways it can manifest, right? It's natural forms and perverted forms, you know? So the more dangerous it gets, the more perverted, you know? Unless it's like Kshatriya on a battlefield, you know? You know, that's natural for them. So, yes?
Maharaj, could you please explain how the fear comes from the envy of Krishna?
Because you're afraid of your relationship with God, because then he's the control and majority, and I'm not. So that's what we're actually afraid of. You know, you understand? Because the point is that's the identity. So when they're afraid, like say for the body of death or anything, because that your identity will change. But that's me. So you're afraid of losing the medium through which the identity is manifest. But that's the thing, is that the me is not going to die. It won't change. But the point is there'll always be a trouble when it's, because God is by, you can see by just how things function and everything, that he's actually the control and enjoyer, not us. So we have to give up that fear of that, you know, that's why also morning that question says, no, but isn't the Bhakti Sukriti, you know, unknown devotional activities, isn't that messing with my independence?
Yeah.
You know, because then I'm being purified and actually being brought closer to devotional service, so... In a point, you know. Like that. Yeah.
Does that mean that the more extreme activities you need in order to get that satisfaction, the more identity crisis you actually have?
Yeah, the more jaded. Yeah. Until at one point, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that.
Five in the chamber, and then
it's five and a half. Which half? Yeah, you know, so it gets to a point. It's like with that there was a king, I think, I'm not sure what year, but I think it was in last century, early last century. He died of boredom. Because he had everything. Anything you could want, anything he could get. And so after a while, he just became so bored, he just died. There's an actual technical term about... A medical term for dying of boredom. I'm sure there's a few more, but I think it's a rare disease. But you know, but if anybody was put in that condition, then it's good chance. You know, just very few actually get, you know, everything. Because here you also have, even now people have the facilities to be in that position. They don't actually know what to do with it. They don't know how to enjoy. So here you have a king. So he knows what good food, good clothes, you know, social interactions, prestige, all these different things are, you know. So there isn't any more. While the other ones, they don't know. So it's just, the idea is, if I have more money, I'll be happy. So they can continue trying to make more money. But it's what you do with the money. It's, you know, it's... So they're not even good sense enjoyers. The present, you know, modern man... Very, you know, he's not a good sense of joy.
It's interesting that in Krishna Lila, in the original form, when Krishna gets into adventure, then all the emotions and love of residents of Vrindavan is highly increased.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
It brings them closer, you know, more meditation. So it is there.
It is there, but that's its natural form. But here, it's that excitement is generated, but not connected to Krishna. So you think the form is actually that's where it stops. You're experiencing Krishna, but in the form. While them, the form and that what it generates, that excitement, brings them to Krishna. Because it's yoga maya, so it takes them to Krishna. While here, it takes them away from Krishna. That's the thing. So technically you can say, when we say perverted and natural, we mean perverted and natural according to the form of it. But mentality, everything here is perverted. Because Krishna's not involved. As soon as Krishna's involved, then it becomes normal. You know, so it can be perverted manifestation, but connecting to Krishna, yes, but it's just beginning. that what's ideal is natural manifestation, connection to Krishna. That's considered the most stable. You know, it's the most sustainable, most easily able to be shared, most like that, you know.
Yes. Maharaj, the example you give me about the mirage, it seems that part of it is not recognizing one potency is coming, but I'm spreading that experience in so many forms. And
yes.
Thinking they completely.
Yeah, that's the same, because they're looking for the same thing. The person is doing one thing, and he's not getting the taste. So then something else is, you know, he adjusts the form, you know. Does that make sense? You know, but it doesn't. You know, the skier is there. You know, there's two skis, and he's going down, and it's really happening, and the dry powder and all that. And then suddenly, this guy in a boogie board just whoosh, goes past him and does all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's kind of like, you know. So if he can keep his decorum and that, you know, they're in a higher class, and those are kind of the low end of, the sludge of the slopes, you know, kind of like that, you know. So then it's okay, but otherwise, then that element of that more excitement, more things, because on the skis you can't sit there and go flying in the air and spinning. You can't do that, you know. But he does. He can do all that. But at the same time, is it lacks prestige and other things like that, you know. So it's you know. Does that make sense? So one might be attracted by the other. The other one's crazy, but as he calms down and all that, then he might see as the other one has more class. You know, the other one, he's been doing this class all the time, but it's getting boring. So then the other one looks, you know what I'm saying? So it's just the way the material. But you're catching a quality of Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But then they take it's the form is what's causing it. So, or they might move in between one. In either case, both of them are exciting, so that's there. But then, you know, you break your leg, you break something, you end up in one of those Minerva casts, you know? You know, with your nose sticking out, you know, like that or something, you know? And then after so many months, when you get out of that, then you decide, okay, we won't do that anymore, right? You know, skiing's dangerous, so, you know, we should stick to the ground, you know, so we'll get into motorcycles or something, you know, like that. You know, so, you know, it's just, that's all. It's just, it means that either the same quality is there, but just finding the different forms to manifest it, or either a detail in that quality or another quality. You know? You know what I'm saying? Because then from the, if it's just the excitement or the fun or the freedom, then you could also just go down to the beach. You know, so it's just a matter of which quality is and which it goes through. You have to see what's the thread that holds them all together. You know? So, yes.
These secondary rasas that we're talking about?
Generally, Prabhupada's mentioned in that third verse of Bhagavatam basically is pointing out that in the material world, basically people taste the secondary rasas. They don't really taste the primary. You know? Because it means you go out with friends, so it's always laughter or this or that. But how much friendship is actually there? You know, as long as there's a good time and there's some money or somebody has, then they're friends. But as soon as that's not there, then they're not. It's not that, you know, good times, bad times. You know, one of those, you know, the opening of the you know, the
best of times.
Yeah, like that. It's not that. That's why it's an old movie, because, you know, you don't really know if anybody actually did it. It's just an idea, so if you put it now, they'll say, no, that didn't happen. You put it back to this time, okay, it could have happened like that. So, yeah. You know, so.
Right, what's the difference of primary and secondary?
Primary is the first five. Those are actually sthayi bhavas. The other ones are flavors that come within those rasas. But basically, if you're not following the Vedas, it's very hard to be sure that you'll be situated even in those five, because you don't know the activities and duties that generate them. You know, it's just like Chanakya says, you can test friendship when there's difficulty, you know, disease or loss of money. Then you know, when like that, and they stick around, and that, those are friends. And the other ones, you don't see them, and then when you get better, then they're around again, and all that. They're, you know. Yeah, acquaintances. They're not really high level. They're not good friends. They're just, you know, okay, they like to be around when things are okay. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is you don't have that taste of those five major rasas is not constant. You may get a little here and there, but the other 12, those are pretty much, you know, pretty much standard what one moves through. Does that make sense? No, the others, there's some glimmer of them. You know, I mean, it's just like the donkey. You only need a carrot, you know, just there, and then, you know, keeps them going all day. So long as at the end of the day he gets some little bit of dry grass to eat, he's cool. Right? Does that make sense? But I wonder how often they actually get a carrot. Right? You know, how often does a donkey get a carrot?
They've heard of it.
He's heard of it. Yeah, but I mean, what happens to the carrot? Because if the donkey doesn't get it, it means somebody else eats it. Yeah. Who'd want to eat a carrot that's been dangling in front of the donkey all day and he's been looking at it?
You know? Put them more as well.
Huh? Okay,
yeah.
But then when it gets too limp and all that, then you give it to the pigs.
Probably.
Yeah, okay, they'll eat it. They'll eat it. Okay.
You mentioned in Vrindavan about whenever it was cold, what they do with donkeys, you know, because they not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But so, what's that got to do with the carrot?
No, I just remembered.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's nice.
Connected with this, if one gets more purified, then do you can one perceive Krishna's qualities more strongly? Because of Prabhupada.
Naturally, but I'm saying anybody can if they're thoughtful. But it's just a matter, it's perceiving them as one thing, not getting distracted by the whole process of the forms and that. That's your main difficulty.
I mean with the Leela, because when Prabhupada would hear that the demon had been killed, then he would be slapping his thigh.
Yeah.
And somebody else reads and there's a mild chuckle and then they turn page and move on.
Yeah.
For him it was very strong.
Yeah, because the whole rasa, just the whole thing, the happiness that's there, you know, Krishna's done, how special. And, you know, all that kind of thing, is that he's taking that, while we're just looking at it as a chronology of the story. You know? Yeah, so. Okay. The self becomes almost equal to Brahman in every respect, except in the matter of creation, sustenance, and dissolution of the universe, which belong exclusively to the Lord. So the jiva is not able, doesn't do that. It is admitted that the individual soul in the state of moksha could assume a body out of its own free will, sankalpa, for the purpose of enjoying bliss or for movement. Such a body assumed by the jiva is not a karmic body, and as such, no bondage is caused to it. The jiva could also remain without a body if he so desires. Right? So he can remain without one, just in moksha, or he can assume the body. Right? So the devotees, because they want to be in relationship with Krishna, then they always assume a body. Does that make sense?
Who else is there?
Just those with no body. So nobody's there.
If the same Mayavadis cannot achieve Krishna.
So who would be there?
Who else would be there?
That means there are Brahmavadis. They understand everything's Brahman.
They have no body. I mean, like jellyfish.
Basically, you could say here they have no body, there they have no body. Yeah. Means here they have no body, they're alone, right? So they don't identify with what's here. And when they get there, then they have no body, they don't have a body that they're in.
So they walk like this.
They're just 10,000 at the tip of the hair floating around in Brahman.
And everybody else is big and, you know, have bodies and.
I guess. So you're worried if they'll bump into each other? Or? You don't, because those who have bodies aren't worried about those. Those with body are not worried about nobody. Right?
What interaction is there?
You know, so that you're going along, you feel something like that. What was that? And the other person says, nobody. You know?
In the state of moksha, they experience bliss. That's the experience.
That's the bliss of not being disturbed by the material world.
I mean, they have no karma. They are there.
Yeah,
they,
but the thing is they have no nothing.
What are they doing?
Nothing.
Why they stuck there?
Because they want to be there.
But that's nobody. What about those who want the bodies? I mean, the devotees. It's
that, like a, but then they're there with their bodies and moving around.
What are they doing?
Read Krishna book. That's what they're doing. Does that make sense? They're interacting with Krishna. No, they're not just having a body and sitting there in Brahman floating around and stuff like that.
No.
Having a body means, what he's pointing out is that the Shastra does not say that he can't have a body. So therefore, he's pointed out they can be there with no body, but they could also be there with a body. And if they're there with a body, then they're going to be interacting with that body.
I don't understand why they're stuck there.
Who? The ones with nobody?
No, those who don't have... Those nobody, I understand.
But they're not stuck, the ones that have body.
They are not in... They are not in Vaikuntha. They are not in...
No, that's what it means. When you have a body, you'd be in Vaikuntha.
Oh, that's what
it means. Yeah, yeah. It means you can stay in nobody and float around in the Brahma Jyoti. Okay. Or you can have a body.
And then automatically...
It means the point is you're accepting that body because that's what you want. You want to have a body because it's generated from the soul. Because he naturally has form. You know, like God has form, so the soul has form. Like that. Yeah. So all it is he's using this language that to explain to them just that natural step. You know, and once they've accepted this point of body, now you can discuss the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah.
That's his sangati.
Yeah, that's the sun, like that. But it doesn't. Doesn't much give what they. But it doesn't explain what's the nature of being in the spiritual world if they have a body. He doesn't. Okay.
I mean, it's so sound.
Oh, I see. Okay. So maybe you have to add a little something there. Because this is, okay, the concept of mukti. But then in that one who's accepted the body, therefore, then what he does in mukti, then that's the eternal. Okay. So, happy? Okay. Then, number three, Brahma Sampradaya. Need for a new darshana. In spite of Ramanujacharya having written lengthy commentaries on Vedanta Sutra and Bhagavad Gita and other important works like Vedarta Sangraha, still there was much that had been left undone or insufficiently done by him. I wonder if he's quoting from a Madhva book in this one. I think he's reading from a Madhva book here. Definitely the Advaita system of philosophy had not been dislodged from its pedestal on the Upanishads. A passing notice of a few passage from the principal Upanishads, such as was attempted by Ramanuja in his writings, was not sufficient to inspire confidence. I would say is that basically is... Ramanuja would have established, but he's established that first step because there's different flavors that are there. And so, you know, even within Vaikuntha, there's different flavors. So that flavor had been established, because still there are people following and practicing Ramanuja today. Right? So that's the... But then there would have been those who are still very hard line on the Mayavad that they would have basically ignored. Because we can see is that's easy enough since they're already ignoring the obvious anyway. Right? To be a Mayavada, you have to ignore a lot of real obvious stuff that doesn't make any, you know, their philosophy doesn't make sense, so they're very attached to it. So those who are a little bit more, those who are more sincere, then by getting the association of the devotees, the pure devotees, then could see that real monism, you know, or in other words, absorption in the service of the Lord, is better than their idea of this impersonal formless monism. Right? So they would have then taken up Sri Vaishnavism, right? Now, for the more hardcore like that weren't, you know, the ones that were more juggling with words and therefore would go back and sit down and work out their own idea of what would be a refutation of Sri Vaishnavism, and then not go back and discuss it, because if they had discussed it with Ramanuji, would have defeated it. But it would just be, they would just sit on their own and be satisfied that, you know, they have something, because they don't want to. They're not sincere seekers, right? So therefore, Madhva will come in with a more, you know, kind of smashing technique to, in other words, instead of pleasantly taking them from their exclusive oneness into actually the Vaishnav concept of God and his creation, you know, he's non-different from his energies. So that gentle, more comfortable thing, he just comes in and just smashes their theory, because it's not one, it's two, right? Instead of the one with, okay, you like oneness, but here's real oneness, right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say, the kid's eating mud, right? So the mud, so you like to eat, yes? You like to eat things good, yes. Okay, this is good. It gives them some real food. So the ones that take it, then fine. But the ones that even that's offered, no, I like the mud, then you come out and then you have to say, this is not food, this is food. You understand? That's the difference. So in here, then we have to look at it, that it's that they came up, not that they came up with philosophy that Ramanuja couldn't cover. It's just that they just came up with philosophy that made it, justified it in their own mind, so they could continue being Mayavadis. Right? I'm not sure if I can read this. Where does it actually just get into the straight philosophy and not just in the next section?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll start with the next section. Like that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, from the point of view of, how you say? The Madhvas, because this need for a new darshan, I think this is based on a, how you say? A Madhva himself. So the Madhvas don't think very highly of Ramanuja. So we won't take that line, because he's one of the acharyas that Lord Chaitanya, you know, told him what to do. And it means we have to, Ramanuja is an incarnation of Ananta Sesh. So he can't be too far off, you know. while Madhvacharya, he's, you know, Hanuman, Bhima, Vayu, like this. So they're both great devotees, so you can't. It's not proper to take that line. So we won't deal with this first thing.
Right.
Yes.
It seems that, as you mentioned previously, that they are followers of Ramanuja and followers of Madhva. So that preaching and the development, the natural development, wasn't oriented to actually Mayavadis. Because, and still nowadays they are Mayavadis.
Yes, still they are.
So they are not sincere anyway.
Yes.
So the preaching was developed for the general public.
Yes. Yeah,
then
of course.
Then they can understand. Otherwise, okay. Mayavadis, they're not going to change anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, you just see is that there's, means you may have those who are, could be innocent, but they're just too distracted by their own. So you just have to, you know, in other words, you speak nicely first, and if that doesn't work, then you speak strongly. So all it is Ramanuja's is the speaking nicely, and so Madhvacharya's is the speaking strongly. So it's there. Not that Ramanuja can't speak strongly, it's just that the overall method is very pleasant. You know, festivals, Vaishnava association. It's more of, you know, this is so nice, why don't you come and join us? You know, what you're doing is a bit boring.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Madhva just gets right in there. You know. Yeah, but the thing is we have both. We use both. So that means it's said that the on the sannyas danda, that the prash, you know, it means you have the danda, and the danda, there's something on it that represents your philosophy or your method, like that. So Ramanujas have a flag, right? Tilak and Shankha Chakra, and, you know, like that kind of thing. Ours has the little, that's called the prash, that little bent thing. So Puri Maharaj was explaining that that's called, use some two words, something dumpster, I think. Dhamstra means it's like on the battlefield, you have that battle axe that's curved like this. But you know, that the one curved like this is specifically for cutting off heads. You know? Like you sometimes have those long poles, and they have that kind, those old ones. You know, because you're there specifically for heads. You know? So it says that's what... It's two things. One, it represents Paramatma. I mean, the Jiva, I think, and the big one's Paramatma. And like that... No, it's Paramatma, excuse me. Paramatma. In other words, you have body, mind, and words as the danda, and that is focused on Paramatma. And the other is that shape is there because it's for, you know, defeating the philosophies against, you know, service of the Lord. So you have both of those, you know, the pleasant of just connected to, and the other is that,
you know. So Jadvaita Maharaj took that to an extreme, right?
Yes, he's good. Yeah, he can do it in one line. Yeah, that's his technique. Yes.
Why Lord Chaitanya didn't accept Ramanuja's line and took Madhva?
Because Madhva is so strong on Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, while Ramanuja is more as this Vishnu. You know, so any of the forms, but Madhva is that Krishna is the Supreme. So that's the main reason. But otherwise, as far as, let's say, our culture, our Vaishnav culture of getting together, our festivals, serving Vaishnavs, were more, that's the aspects taken from Ramanuja. Because he took two from each sampradaya. So culturally, we'll be more comfortable with the Madhva, I mean the Ramanujas. You know, so each one has something that's in line. So the Chinta Beda Beda Tattva then has all those eight principles. Okay, Life of Sri Madhvacharya, 1238 to 1317. You know, it'd be very interesting to note is what's going on in world history at the time when the Acharyas were there. Mm-hmm. Because generally the times when they mention, these are when major kind of things, like during Ramanuja, because he was 1100s, right? Mm-hmm. Where is it? Mm-hmm. There's a lot on Sri. Right there. Yeah, this is kind of the time when all the intellectuals had problems with the church. And I think there's Aquinas and all that were there trying to bond, you know, the Christian theology and the modern kind of intellectual scientific thought, you know, and all these different kinds of things was there. Because all this the stuff that later became the Protestant movement, it kind of came up first at this time. Like that. And then before, when Ramanuja was there, I mean, when Shankara was there, that was a time when it was very strong, kind of the Middle Ages, that was one of their prosperous periods. Like that. And so now here again, this is then kind of when, again, you had all those other thinkings and things going on. So it's interesting, it's that when such personalities are here, then everything kind of picks up. Like that. Like when Lord Chaitanya was there, then the Renaissance and all that. So you see, it's just these are. Sri Madhva was born possibly in 1238 and lived 79 years, 1317. His parents were Narayana Bhatta and Vedavati, Brahmins of humble status in the village of Pajaka, 8 miles southeast of the town of Udupi. His original name was Vasudev. At 7, he had his Upanayanam and went through a course of Vedic and Shastric studies. Probably at the age of 16, he took sannyas from Achyuta Preksha and got the name Purnapragya. Sometime after initiation was spent in the study of Vedanta classics, beginning with the Ishta Siddhi of Vima Katma. However, frequent arguments between master and disciple terminated the studies before long. Oh, okay. Doesn't mention here how he became. Means that I know of, he started all this much earlier. Because they're saying probably at the age of 16, and I know if he took sannyas at 12, is that he had decided he wanted to take sannyas. And, you know, so I think he was walking with his brahmachari stick or as he was just coming along, he asked his father, when can I take sannyas? So his father had this old dry walking stick. His father got so angry, he just stuck it into the ground, you know, and just in his anger, and said, when this stick grows leaves, you can take sannyas. You know, basically meaning,
never.
Not now, yeah, no, never, like that. So then they went in the house, and in the morning when they woke up, there was leaves on the branch. Like that. So he took sannyas.
Wasn't he this story about the crocodile?
That was Shankaracharya.
Oh.
That was at six, you know. Because his point was, his mother said, you can only take sannyas just before, you know, death, you know. Because he wanted to take sannyas, you know, before that. So then he made a crocodile appear in the Ganga and got caught by that. So then his mother's there, and you know, it looks obvious that he can't be saved. So then he says, so I'm just about to die, so can I take sannyas now? So his mother gave her blessings, and then the crocodile went away and he came out. And, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Purnapragya, so now it means as a sannyasi, he's known as Purnapragya. Mm. Okay. Purnapragya was then made head of the mat of Achyuta Preksha under the name of Ananda Tirtha. The name Madhva is assumed by him for certain esoteric reasons connected with his claim to be an avatar of Vayu. He possessed an uncommon... now he's gotten into academics. It's funny, I can see where he's pulled his resources from. Sri Madhva spent time in Udupi teaching the other disciples of Achyuta Preksha. These teachings and constant philosophical disputations developed his dialectic abilities and made him an adept in polemics, and he shows himself to be in his works. Encouraged by these successes, he made up his mind to go on a South Indian tour. It's not a matter of encouraged by these, it means he's come to do this. So he just with time does all this, and at a time when others would consider him mature, then he goes out, right? Because otherwise, you have to be able to be accepted by others. Otherwise, does that make sense? It has to work. You know, like Jiva Goswami spent 20 years in Varanasi studying, you know, Nyaya and grammar and everything. You know, just so then you know exactly what they're going to say so that you know exactly how to defeat it. You know, so anything Jiva Goswami writes, nobody can mess with. You know, it's just not possible. Mm-hmm. Okay. He made up his mind to go on a South Indian tour to find a wider field for the propagation of his ideas. Trivandrum, Kanyakumari, Sri Rangam, Rameshwara, etc. This tour took 2 or 3 years. Back to Udupi, Sri Madhva was resolved to establish a new Siddhanta, and he began his career as an author. Right? In other words, it's a new presentation to the Vaishnava philosophy. His first literary work was the Gita Bhashya. Then he started his first North Indian tour, because the Gita is like a fundamental ABCs of you know, spiritual life. So the Shankarites accept that. It means everybody accepts it. At Badrinath, Madhvacharya left by himself for Mahabhadri Gashrama, the abode of Vyasadeva in the upper regions of the Himalayas. Right? He had a servant who always traveled with him. And so then they started up the hill, you know, and it was all right till they got to the top of the hill. Right? Then Madhva just stepped from that hill to the top of the next hill to the top of the next hill. the devotee, you know, he just came rolling down, you know, the mountain, and then the other disciples, they picked him up and, you know, like that. But he didn't just walk there. He, you know, walked, yeah, but on top of mountains, you know, so yeah, like that. Because upper is where Vyasadeva sits. You know, he has a seat in the lower one, but he also has main ashrams in the upper one. He returned after some months, and inspired by Vyasadeva, he wrote his Brahma Sutra Bhashya, which was transcribed to his... He dictated, and his disciple Satyatirtha transcribed it. Most of his books, he just spoke it and they wrote it. He didn't like sit himself and write it. He just got that because it was too slow. Right? Like it says, most of the time he would have 6 scribes, And he'd say the first verse to the first one, then the first verse of the next book to the second one, the first book of the first verse of the third book to the third one, like this, because you'd write and then you need some time for the ink to dry, you know, like that. So then he'd come back and then go to the first one. So he'd do six books at once, and he'd keep them all busy. They would be constantly writing, right, like that. So. The returning trip to Udupi was through Bihar and Bengal and to the banks of the Godavari, right? So Bengal. So this is where he meets Lord Chaitanya. Right? So then he specifically told him the philosophy and how to present it and everything. And to the banks of Godavari, where Madhvacharya had a debate with a veteran scholar, Shobhanabhatta, who was defeated and became his important disciple of the name of Padmanabhatirtha. I'm not sure if this was the one. It may come up later. But one of them who was very, very big is he said, I've read your works, all, you know, your commentaries, and I everything makes sense, but this one thing I still can't understand is how the jiva, when he attains liberation, being Brahman, doesn't merge into, you know, the Brahman. So then he was sitting down. Madhvacharya called for his gindi and his achman cup, and you have a tray. Or these other things that you know, water goes in. When you wash your hands, it goes into this kind of special tray that has this lip so it won't splash. So he took the bowl and he took the two cups. He didn't say anything. He poured the one in and he poured the other in. And then the scholar said, exactly. That's the point. That's what I don't understand. Then Madhvacharya picked up the thing and then filled both of them again. So the guy he offered his obeisances and that was it. He was his disciple. So he didn't even say a word, right? He's so smart he could figure out how to say it. The other guy's so smart he could understand it. Another important conversion during this tour was that of Narahari Tirtha. The first North Indian tour was fruitful and caused considerable impression on the people. Till then, Madhva's criticism of the Advaita and other prevailing schools had been merely destructive. He had not offered a new bhashya in place of those he had so ruthlessly criticized. But with the publication of his commentaries on Gita and the Brahma Sutras, no one could say he had no alternative system to offer in place of those he criticized. His first achievement after his return to Udupi was the conversion of his very guru, Achyutapreksha, completely to his new Siddhanta. He was defeated, not without a fierce resistance. Madhvacharya now had got many converts and adherents. In that time, he installed the beautiful deity of Lord Krishna in his mutt. He introduced some changes in the ceremonial codes and rigorous fasting on Ekadasi days. After that, Madhvacharya started on a second tour of North India and returned after visiting Delhi, Kurukshetra, Benares, and Goa. The subsequent tours were mostly within the Carnatic state. Many literary works had, in the meanwhile, been written by him, such as the commentaries of the Ten Upanishads, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Mahabharata. The increasing popularity of the new faith naturally caused no small apprehension to the followers of the established faith, Advaita. Madhvacharya's only business was to dispel the mist of Mayavad philosophy, to which he was a veritable enemy all through his life. His library, which contained a very valuable and rare collections of books, was devastated in a raid done by Mayavadis. This incident brought Madhvacharya in touch with Jayasimha, the ruler of Kumbha, and in this opportunity the great court pandit, Trivikrama Panditacharya, was converted. Trivikrama's conversion was a turning point in the history of the faith. He wrote a commentary in Madhva's Brahma Sutra Bhashya called Tattva Pradeep, and his son, Narayana Panditacharya, was the author of the Madhva's biography, Madhva Vijay. By this time, Madhva's fame spread far and wide, and many more joined to him. Then he composed his masterpiece, Anuvakyana, based on the Vedanta Sutra. The last years of Madhvacharya seemed to have been spent in teaching and worship. He designated his younger brother Vishnu and seven other disciples to become the founders of the Ashtamats of Udupi. Three works were composed about this time: Nyaya Vivarana, Karma, Nirnaya, and Krishnamrita, Maharnava. Charging his disciples with his last message from his favorite Upanishad, Rukmini Upanishad. Not sit still, but go forth and preach. Sri Madhvacharya left this world in 1318. I think it was like a Vyas Puja or something. And then all these flowers were put, everyone was throwing flowers until there were so many flowers you couldn't see them. You know, and everything kirtan, everyone was very happy. And then when, you know, it was over and then moved the flowers, he wasn't there. So be careful about covering totally in flowers. Right? You know. At least, you know. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaudapaya.